Brad's going to let me be mobile. Well, welcome to everyone. Nice to see you after the feast. We had many different places we went, many different things we did. And none so much as my brother, though. I talked to him a little bit and asked him how things went. And he said he went eight places in 8 days. All within, you know, driving. There we are. I'm still in festival mode. I actually was going to talk about something else, and Shelby said, "What are you going to talk about?" And I started describing it to her, and she was asking me some questions. And finally she said, "What are you going to talk about that for?" So I took the hint. You can thank her. I'll have to do that someday in the future when she's not around. No, I don't know. I'm going to talk a little bit about a subject that we just rehearsed at the Feast of Tabernacles, and also going to tie into it. I won't tell you ahead of time what I'm going to tie in, but some things that actually have a connection to this local congregation. But the title of the message, if you like titles, is "Where is Your Home?" Now, this picture right here was my home for the 3 months that I lived in Thailand. Actually, I stayed in one little room upstairs, not that big room you're looking at. Actually, the fellow in the doorway, no, that's not him. But anyway, I didn't stay in that room. I stayed in some little dinky room in the back of that building. But while I was at the feast, we had people that their home was in Myanmar. And Myanmar is a beautiful place, fairly repressed right now. And a nice, pretty river, the Irrawaddy, that comes down through Rangoon, or Yangon. Some people there at the festival lived in Thailand. And I lived there for 3 months and have visited several other times, as you are aware. Maybe you live in Brickerville. Or maybe Lititz. Or perhaps Littlestown. Or Carlisle. Maybe you live in Malaysia. Kuala Lumpur, beautiful city. I've heard, I haven't been there. We had people at the feast from Kuala Lumpur. They have an eye there, that giant Ferris wheel like they have in London. Maybe you live in Felton. Well, North Hopewell Township Police Force. Or maybe you live down in Maryland. We live all over. Northampton. I don't know that building. Is that building there? Where's our Northampton people? You recognize that? Okay. You know, you're taking a chance when you get a picture and you think, well, that might not even be there. It might be a different Northampton. I don't know. Or Merchtown. That's a neat picture. Got the Conrail locomotive as it's coming through. Maybe you live out in beautiful Williamsport or right here in Enola, the home of a lot more trains. Or maybe, hope this isn't the case with anybody here in this room, but maybe you don't have a home. There's a lot of people in this world that don't have a home, or they have something that's very temporary in a refugee camp. You know, when the Israelites left Egypt, they didn't have a home. They had a home. They lived in Goshen. But they had to leave. They were told to leave. And they did. It says with a high hand, but, you know, I'm sure there were some apprehensions. And they were looking for a different country. And this was a country that God was going to take them to. They didn't, other than Moses, who had been around as a general, the rest of them really didn't have much experience of the freedom to go visit anywhere. So they were looking for a country and they weren't even sure where it was or how they were going to get there. And God parted the seas. You like that picture? I couldn't resist putting that in there. Is that what it would be like today? You see Moses in the front there. That's kind of neat. Can you see Moses? Yeah. I like the. You probably can't tell that. It's a. Can you read what it says? Anybody read that? It's a warning. You know, water on both sides of the. I thought it was a great picture. It probably wasn't like that. It was probably a little more like this. Crossing the Red Sea. This is someone's sketch of it. But they didn't have a country. They left the one that they had. And at the time they were moving, they didn't have a country. They were looking for one. We read in Leviticus 23, maybe you went over this during the feast, that you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. I'm Yahweh, your God, your Elohim. Now the word for booths could be translated tabernacles or tents. It could just as easily be that. The Feast of Tabernacles that we just observed and celebrated is a time to remember that Israel lived in tents during their journey out of Egypt. That's what it says there in Leviticus. That your generations, your children, the people that come after you will remember that God had the Israelites dwell in temporary tents, tabernacles, whatever, booths, during their journey out of Egypt. Why? Why should we remember that? Why did God have it in the first place? That's a simple picture of a temporary dwelling. It was a booth. It was, as much as anything, a shelter from a very hot sun in that part of the world. Now, when I was there in Thailand for 3 months, I would see shelters. They didn't look quite like this. They were more tarp, made out of tarps. But they had shelters in the fields where the workers could go to escape the hot sun. And even in this country, you'll see, and you certainly see them in other countries, you will see shelters, very, very small ones, that are for livestock to get in out of the sun. It's more important, obviously, if you're in a hot climate than it would be in a temperate climate like where we live here. But they had structures like this. They're easy to build. They're easy to tear down when it's time to move on. Now, if your life involves moving, traveling, it's important that whatever it is you stay in is easy to pack up and move, isn't it? Just like the original tabernacle that the Israelites also had. It was something that was portable. They could made out of curtains and so forth. They could fold it up and carry it to the next place they camped. The important thing to remember, though, is that they were temporary. They weren't permanent dwellings. They were temporary, easy to move, easy to tear down, easy to set back up. Here's a picture of a modern one. You can see the different types of leaves that go on the top, different branches, four species they talk about. It's not supposed to be totally airtight or even light tight or anything. But there's an example of a sukkah, after which the feast is named, the Sukkot, meaning more than one, the plural for sukkah. The booth or temporary shelter was intended to be a symbol for our lives on earth because our homes are temporary. Our homes are temporary. They're not going to last forever. They're not built to last forever. Nothing on earth will last forever, of course. Even your life and my life are very temporary. They don't last forever in this tent, this tabernacle. Now, this year at the feast in Chiang Mai, we had some people with us that understand this concept very well, better than you and I understand it, because if you ignore these ones in the front, because Lanu Nan lives there, and he's one of the students I taught and still teach on occasion. He lives there in Mesa Luang. These two, Umuzaw and his wife, who everyone calls Auntie. Regular services on the Sabbath at his house. All right, forget them. But in the rows behind them, these people have no home. They have a hut that they live in, but they don't have citizenship anywhere. They are from Myanmar, from Burma. That's where they lived. And then they had to flee. And now they live in Thailand as guests of the government, and as guests of the, under the protection of the United Nations, in refugee camps. They don't have a country. Actually, they are looking for a country, just like it says in the scriptures. They're looking for a country, literally, because they can't stay in the camps, although, you know, obviously some people do and they eventually die. They are not resettled. But the idea is that they are going to be resettled somewhere. They have to find a country that will take them, with sponsors in that country that will take care of them and make sure they get there, make sure they can get their feet on the ground when they show up. They don't have a country. They're looking for a country. All of them. We had about, I forget, it's about 14 in various families and friends of families. Would have had more, but you'll see them in a picture later. We had a family that just recently was able to emigrate to the United States, or leave there and come to the United States. They're in Oregon. They usually make it to the feast, but this time they got to go to a festival in the United States. The people that were there in Chiang Mai this year were from two camps. One is Ban Mae Sarin, and the other one I'll talk about in a minute. Now, I'll just give you a little bit of history about these camps. You can read it there for yourself. Don't have to read it all necessarily. But these camps have been in existence since in the early 90s. This one is 1991. This has been the site of many of the refugee camp consolidations since. So what happens is you have a lot of camps, and they try to move them together to be more efficient. If you're going to have schools and other services, it makes sense to get the people congregated into larger camps. The camps involve this. You'll notice it mentions the Karenni. That's the Karenni right here. That's one of the tribes in the hills. I'll show you a picture later, a map. There's Karen and there's Karenni, and there's other refugees as well. But many of them are from Karenni and Karen, which are kind of related because those tribes have been kind of in a perpetual war with the Burmese government. These camps are only a few kilometers from the border, and they are isolated in general. If I can get Google Earth to work, I'll show you a picture to show you just how isolated they are. This camp has never been attacked. There are almost 4,000 people there. This is a small camp, 4,000 people. Some of them have many tens of thousands. The other camp is Mae Ra Ma Luang. And it's further south from the other one. And some of the people that were at the feast came from this camp. And it's been around since, 1988, it says there. And there has been, this area is a little safer. It's a little bit further from the border as well. First set up in 1995. And the initial population was about 4,000. Now it's, I think, a little over 16,000 people there. So it's a city. It's a city. And you can, there's a lot of detail there about close this camp down, move people here. So even, yes, these people don't have a country. They are from Myanmar, but they're not really Burmese citizens. They're definitely not Thai citizens. Once you're in a camp, you can't leave. We have the legacy has to go through all kinds of gymnastics to get permission to take the refugees out of the camps and bring them to the feast in Chiang Mai. And it's not easy, and some years it doesn't happen. And one of the reasons I'm sharing some of this with you is because this congregation has given money to Legacy, and some of it is earmarked specifically to enhance the festival experience of those over there in Asia. And one of the things that money is used for is all the expenses it takes to get the people out of the camps and get them to Chiang Mai for the feast. You got to pay. It's not like you don't have to pay off people, but there are a lot of people in the chain of events that need to be paid. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But it's not just a matter of just, they can come. They can catch a bus and come. It's not the way it is. There's all kinds of paperwork. There are all kinds. You got to pay the people that manage the camps, and then they use their truck to bring them to a certain place. You meet there. And it's very complicated, and it takes a lot of time. It takes usually several trips by Legacy personnel to the camps to arrange this. starting in the summer, they'll make a trip and then make another trip to get all the groundwork laid so that it can happen come feast time. And you may have noticed, we told some friends, we also posted on Facebook, to pray about it, because all it takes is a bomb going off somewhere near the camp or on the Burmese side, and then they shut everything down. They'll shut the camps down. They won't let anybody out. So it's they don't have any freedom in terms of they can't go. They can't come and go. All right, now, I'm going to get out of here. See if Google, I didn't check before. Yeah, here we go. Well, if we're on, we should be able to see something here. First, let me go up to the, well, it doesn't make any difference, I guess, but I'm in my brain. More geared to look at the other camp first. Actually, let's do it this way. All right, here's your geography lesson. Guess I can make it even a little. For those that are interested in these kind of things, here. Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Oh, wow, magic. Here's Thailand. Thailand actually goes down along this peninsula as well. And Myanmar, or Burma, also goes down along the peninsula. It's split. And also goes up, up toward China. Myanmar actually borders Bangladesh, borders India up here, borders China up here, borders China here, Laos, and Thailand. It's a large country. It's the largest country in Southeast Asia, Burma is, and it's the 40th largest country in the world. That kind of surprised me. I thought it was kind of small, but it's not. And Chiang Mai is right here, where I've got that little pin, where it says Empress Hotel. And the camps are right along the Burmese border. They're in Thailand, but they're very close to the Burmese border. So as we pan down to get closer, I just want to show you a little bit to show you how, at least in my opinion, how remote these are. And I don't see how much detail we can get. I might not be hooked up to the server. We'll see. Yeah, I guess we are. Now notice, I'll back up a little. There's the border. And I don't know exactly that these are the camp locations. It's hard. I couldn't get the exact latitude and longitude, but I just got on Google Earth and started looking for any settlements that were in the area. Burmese-Thai border. And if you just look at this area, there's nothing there. There is nothing there. It is just remote, forested wilderness. But you do have a little stream or river that's coming down through here. And perhaps, I can't prove it, but perhaps this is the camp. If we get way down, you see along the river, you can see structures. And we could go back and forth along here. But you see the, hopefully you can see the river passing through. And you see different structures. There's a lot more here. There's also some up here. I couldn't find any other village in this region. So my guess is that this is where it is. My point in showing you this is to show you how remote it is. There are villages that are spread, you know, people, and these people, the Karen, for instance, the Karen live on both sides of the border. And there are people we had. It was a legacy employee, works there at the office. All these different Shan State and Chin State and Karen State and Karenni State. You had all these people that are very different and who have been fighting against the Burmese, which were the most powerful tribe for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we draw a line on a map and say this is all going to be a country now. But they don't necessarily get along just because there's a line on a map. And in some cases, the tribes span the border and they're on both sides. All right, while we're here, sorry. Let's just take a look at this other camp. I got to back up a little. Again, you're close to the border, and it's very remote. Here it is. Little settlement. You can see the houses there. Did find a little pictures. Shows you some of your brothers and sisters in the body of Christ, and also some that you directly help with your donations from this congregation. I haven't been asked to do this. I just got these pictures myself, but I'm not representing Legacy in giving you this information. It's just my own personal desire to do so. Here you see, this is Thailand. Burma's over here. The capital of Thailand's right here, Bangkok. Up north, the biggest city in the north is Chiang Mai, and the camps are over here. There are camps further down south that different tribes, but the ones that have Church of God members in them, that we're familiar with anyway, are right along here. And here's from one of the agencies in Thailand that helps run the camps. Here's the location of several of them. The two that where you have brothers and sisters that we're aware of, and they were there at the feast, is this camp right here, the Ban Mae Sirin, and also this one right here, the Mae Rama Luang. And what happens is you take a trip from Chiang Mai and to Mae Sirang. I think that's where they decide to meet up. That trip right there takes hours and hours. It doesn't look like it's all that far. It takes many hours. And then the Karen refugee associations that help run the camps, you contract with them to get the people from the camps up to this town. And you got to coordinate to get them this trip made, and they can stay overnight here, and this trip made. And that's many hours, even though it's not all that far. But it's many, many hours because of dirt roads, and the roads crisscross the rivers, and it's not what you might think. So then somebody comes from Chiang Mai to meet both of those groups, and then they can come back to Chiang Mai for the feast. It's not easy. Can be fairly complicated. When they take trips, and here's a few examples. When they take a trip to the camps, they'll load up with supplies. So some of the money actually this congregation donates is used for this, to load up supplies. They don't just show up in the camps without taking something along. And there, that road is actually concrete. This was on a trip back. Just one of the things that happens on the roads there. But this is unusual. You won't see back. Once you get back far enough, you're not going to see that very often. Now, here's the driver. He doesn't help at all. It's a different pecking order, the way they do things in Asia. He just gets to boss everybody around or talk to somebody else and get somebody else to fix the tire. This is an example of how the road goes. And it does this a lot. And you can only go at certain times of the year. It was very rainy before the feast. That's why we were asking for prayers as well, that they'd be able to get out. You need four-wheel drive vehicles because you've got to cross the river multiple times just to get to the camps, or to get back out. And they don't have bridges all the time. So that's common. And there are, I forget, half a dozen or 10 places that to get out of the one camp, you've got to cross this river a whole bunch of times. That's an example of a camp. Now, you can see that they do have homes. They're homes that are actually as good or better than where they lived before. So, you know, I don't want to dramatize their plight at this particular refugee camp. This is the Sirin, the one on the Sirin River. They have the houses that are fairly equivalent to where they would have lived before, in a more remote area perhaps. But they're still very temporary. And they don't have citizenship there, and they can't go anywhere. If you wanted to go into the camp, it looks like, oh, there's the camp, right? We could just drive right in. No, you can't, because that is the river, and you can't get there from here. At least not in a vehicle. Now, there is a way to get there. And they keep, you know, Leon says, you know, you need to go to the camps one time when you come over here. I'm thinking, well, there's no way my wife is going to go to the camp because she doesn't like swinging bridges. And I asked some of the refugees, I said, you know, when, like the girls, there were some teenage girls there. I said, when you get on that thing, do you do this? And they just kind of smiled at me. I said, that's what I like to do. That's only got one, I mean, well, it's got one there and one here. It's not a whole lot. No, that one's on the bank. It's just hanging across the river there. There's nothing. Whatever. That's how you get there. And that's how you get your supplies there. Notice we're carrying, yeah, it's probably El Nuno, I'm not sure, but he's carrying some stuff in. Is it a suspension bridge? Maybe. It's, you know, it's some kind of a structure. It's a partly suspension anyway. There's a house. He seemed to be happy to have made it. That's again La Nunan. The guy teaches Erica, who's the she runs the school basically, and that's Elena, who's home now. She's had some health trouble. Nathan's not in this picture. He was also on one of these trips. This is how you carry things, the poles, and we saw people using that to carry things around. I wasn't in a refugee camp. You just see that in Asia in general. And everybody has to carry, and where does it go? It goes on your head. Because you got to go across that bridge. So they unload the truck, but they got to cross the bridge. This young lady was there at the feast this year. This is a couple years ago. There's a bunch of them. Wayne's waving. Everybody else is just walking across there. I asked them, do they all get on the bridge at the same time? I would think you'd want to cross like a couple at a time. They didn't seem to be worried. They just all go across. There's nobody too big over there. They're all they're short and they don't weigh a whole lot. There's one of the groups. So this family, oh, this is several years ago, and they're not all in the family. He was there. And I don't know who else. Shell, you got to help me here. There's some of these people are not in his family, I don't think. And Nathan's the other, he was a teacher there when I was there. He's not there now, and he's from Mississippi. Typical Corinne dress here. There's a larger group as they were leaving. And you'll see some of these people in some pictures later. Now the other camp, the Mayrama Luang, bigger river, bigger bridge. But you still need to go across on a bridge or maybe a raft, although everybody I talked to, they had not gone across in the raft. They used the bridge. But this looks like a more substantial bridge. I still don't think Shelby would go across it, but there they go. Shell, that's probably Julius there, isn't it? His name's Julius Caesar. Why not, you know? It's a typical path in the village. And those that are our brothers and sisters in Christ live up on a hillside similar to this. There are flatter areas in the camp, but they live up on a hillside like this. And then, besides that, then the houses are up on stilts. This house, I believe, belonged to the family that is now in Oregon. But they had a few people over. Now that's making, you make do. They're all musical. They love their music. Asa Ku is now in Oregon. She was there at the feast. That's her. She has two boys. This is the father of the family that's in Oregon. Everything gets washed in the streams, the clothes, the food. That's what you carry your laundry in. Notice the roof. I got a close-up of how they put the roof together. Talk about temporary houses. There's school. Yeah. Yeah. The water that they drink? I don't know the answer to that, but I will tell you that in most places there in Thailand, and I assume it's the same in the camps, they don't drink the water. They don't drink water from a well or a stream. You generally get drinking water. So my guess is that it's trucked in. But they will wash their food and wash their clothes in water that's just coming in a stream. But I don't think they will drink that. Most everywhere it's bottled water. Even in the cities, you generally don't drink the water that comes out of the tap. They have it bottled. So their school. So you think your school's old, and I don't know who goes to school here. But it's nothing like this one. There's the classroom with a blackboard. Open air, lots of mosquitoes. Well, maybe they just do it in the middle of the day when the mosquitoes aren't very active. Sabupa, she's in Oregon now. A lot of water in Burma and in Thailand. No water shortage. You turn the water on in the hotels, you could get blown away by the force. His name is Lege Tu. He's a couple years older than this now. He's a guitar player. There you go. People aren't the only things that live in the camps. She's one of the younger sisters that's in Oregon now. Let's see. Jay is one of the students that are the ministry that Shelby and I have, Apple Ridge, is helping him in his education, as well as another. He's Thai. We're also helping a Burmese student who's studying in Asia. He's going to be a teacher, a government approved teacher, and go back to the hill tribes where he's from. He's Karen. That's why he would go on this trip. He can communicate with them. And he's going to go up to where he's from and teach once he has finished his education. Carrying supplies, that's how you do it. That's Saukeu, and he was baptized at the feast this year. You've got your doctors' clinics. You've got different NGOs, different organizations run the different facets of a camp. Medical is one of them. Several of them were at the feast. There he was. His name is, I can't remember, sorry. He liked to sing too. They all sing. Actually pretty beautiful. He's got stuff on his mouth because they had some kind of sweet stuff there that you're supposed to put a little fruit in and eat. It's like chili and sugar mixed together. He's just having it plain, getting it on his mouth there. He was at the feast. This is an idea of how they live. They're happy. That water looks pretty clean compared to the big streams. The big streams get full of a lot of sediment. Now your answer, that water right there that they're washing the food in, maybe that's from a truck because it's coming out of the pipes there. Maybe that's been treated. That's typically the color. They have this blue pipe that they use for their water in Thailand. So maybe that's treated or directly from a truck. I don't know. That's not the stream. Lege 2 again. We in the driver likes to torment little kids. And I'm sure he's tormenting them somehow. Acer Ku. And here they got to do something just like young people anywhere. They're playing football or soccer. Out on the open pitch there. There's how they put the leaves together for the roof. Isn't that neat? That's sewn with little twigs. That's Esaku's little sister. And Lanu Nan playing a guitar. They all play. Play something or several instruments. And they're happy. And they play volleyball. And this next picture, I had to put in here, but look at the elevation that guy got. He's kicking it with his feet, I guess. So you play volleyball like you're playing soccer. This year for the feast, Laura Martz and Shelby, these are all, Laura made all these, right? scarves and hats, and she wanted them to be taken to give some of the refugees. So we did. We took a batch of them. And there's that boy that had the stuff on his face when he was in the camp. He's a few years older now. And he liked this. He had that hat on for several days. As hot as it was, he liked that hat. This I just took in the back of a Sungtao. There's his sister with a hat and scarf. There's the whole family in the back of Sungtao. Legacy has one or maybe two of these to get people around. That's their a taxi or a small bus. It's a pickup truck with seats that face each other. We weren't the only ones keeping the feast in Chiang Mai. There was at the Kaaba house. That's the local synagogue. And we actually went to eat in a restaurant where a lady is one of the congregants there. And they had a sukkah, which I never saw because it was back behind. So I didn't take note of it. But this was less than a quarter mile from the hotel where we stayed. And they had these T-shirts that we wore that had Jerusalem in Hebrew, Yerushalayim in Hebrew on the back. And she noticed that. It was like, what are you? We're here keeping the feast. She goes, oh, keep a sukkah. And then she wanted to describe some of their, we were talking back and forth, and she was describing some of the traditions and the different, she said, she didn't always know the English. She said, like the ertrog. I said, yeah, like the lemon and the willow. And then she said, willow. She was saying something. I said, what's willow? She said, she's from Jerusalem, but she spoke English fine. She said, you have a crying willow. I said, no, it's weeping willow. But you can't use weeping willow. You got to use the willows that grow straight up. We had a specific donation before we went to the feast, and somebody instructed that Shelby and I were to use these funds to actually give the refugees something to do that they are, something at the feast that they wouldn't have had otherwise. We tried to figure out things to do because they're with the students, and there were some activities that they weren't able to go to. So there's a tiger farm there. I've told you before about the tiger farm. We took them to the tiger farm, and here's the young ones. That's Julius right there. He's still got the hat on. I mean, it's like 85, 90 degrees. He's got that hat on. And they enjoyed getting in there with the tigers. And us older people got in with the tigers too. Some of us. Not all of us. We tried again with the big ones, but the big ones didn't like somebody. I think it was him. They said it was him. And they kept turning around. They're supposed to ignore you. We got in with the big ones, and these tigers kept looking around at us. And then they wanted to get up and walk around toward us. So finally they gave up and just let us go in with the little ones, which cost more money anyway. We didn't have to pay more. And took some of the money and let them. We stopped at a mall on the way home. Wasn't a mall. It's a Tesco is what it is. They have a different name for it there. And got ice cream. They're pretty happy about that. There, he's got the hat off. I don't know why. He doesn't have the hat on right now. He's sitting on the elephant out. And kids are kids anywhere, see? Now, sometimes I would ask to take her picture, and she would say no. I always ask. I wouldn't just assume. And she would say no. But this time, she didn't say no, but she just stuck her tongue out. They all sing. Here's that family. Julius is learning to play the guitar. And they're not as poor. Some families are dirt poor. They don't have anything. This family, for whatever reason, and I don't know why, they have some things. That is his guitar he brought to the feast, his electric guitar. So they are a little better off than the typical family in a refugee camp. Now, these are Thai students. I just threw that in there. Surachai is like 29 years old, been to a lot of schooling. He was a great guy, good friend. That's the guy that was in a motorcycle accident. His name's Wattaret now because he's a Thai citizen. He changed his name, has a Thai name. Attawat, who was there when I was there, and he works on the farm now. He's not a student. He takes some classes, but he's employed. And Peto, who's, I think, a second-year student that I didn't know before. There, he sang a lot of songs. He and his whole family like to sing. Now, just put this picture in there. They're not refugees. These are the students. This year's batch of students, since this congregation donates to Legacy, that's where some of your money is going to help these guys. Most all of it's going to help these guys. Had three baptisms there. You see Leon and Herb Vieira ready to dunk him. And these all belong to one family. Let's see. I'll show you a picture. Their family. She's an aunt. These two are married. She's an aunt, that's a daughter, and this is just a friend. So that's the connection there. I'll go back. So he was okay. She seemed to be afraid of the water. She was brave. She got in there, but she wasn't happy. And she was happy. You can see. I was involved in laying on hands, but I was not involved in the counseling and did not have to get in the water, get all wet. Counseling all has to be done through a translator. So you really got your work cut out for you when you serve these people in Asia. Now, just wanted to show one more picture here. This is, her nickname was Soda. She's got a real name. I don't know what. And her name is Fun, which in Thai means moon. Because I say Fun. It looks like F-U-N or something like that. And no. And you never can say anything right because they have inflection. And it doesn't matter how you say it. It's wrong. So she finally just said, that's a word for moon. She says, it's moon. So I started calling her moon sometimes. And that's DC and Waruni, I believe. But we just want to show you these two. Their families, they are from Myanmar. They're students. They're from Myanmar. They live in Thailand. One of them has some family that lives in Thailand. One has family that's in Myanmar. They are citizens of neither country. They're not technically refugees because they spent most all their life in Thailand and they don't have to live in a refugee camp, but they have no country either. They have no country either. It's just hard to imagine. We take it for granted. You're born in the United States. You're a citizen. It's not that way in the rest of the world. And these two, born in Burma, now live in Thailand legally, but they have no citizenship anywhere. They don't have papers. They couldn't travel. They can't leave the country. It's a different world than what we're used to. Okay. I just wanted to share some of that with you to show you that the idea of, you know, of a refugee is very real. There are people, you know, people that are our brothers and sisters that don't have a home, that don't have a country, that don't have citizenship. But they weren't the first who were looking for a home. In Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 10, by faith Abraham, remember Abraham, obeyed when he was called to go out to the place where he would receive, which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. He left all kinds of things, didn't he? At first his family went with him, at least a little ways. By faith, he dwelt in a land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. So these, your brothers and sisters in Christ that I just showed you, they weren't the first ones to not have a country and to be wandering, in a sense, wandering around. This particular tent in this picture is supposed to be something like what Abraham's tent would look like. It's actually called Abraham's tent. I'm sure it's a tourist trap somewhere, but something like that. This particular picture is supposed to be Jacob fleeing Haran. Hebrews 11, verse 13. All these died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. And we don't feel like that, do we? Sometimes we have houses, we're secure, we have jobs, we feel like we're pretty attached. But for Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, they knew that they weren't attached. For our friends over there in the camps in Thailand, they know that they're not attached to those homes. They know they're going to have to leave those homes someday. Those homes do not belong to them. That camp is not their home. They're looking for a home. They're looking for another country, just like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were. What about you? How about me? You know, some of us live in Maryland. Some of us live in Pennsylvania. We're all, I imagine, citizens of the United States. Yet in the body of Christ, we have citizens from all kinds of countries across the globe and some who are not citizens of any country. They have no home. No matter what your situation is, no matter what their situation is, where is your true citizenship? Philippians 3, verse 20 tells us that our citizenship is in heaven, from which we eagerly await for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were not citizens of Canaan in any kind of sense. They knew they were strangers. When Abraham needed a place to bury his wife, he had to buy a cave because he didn't have an inheritance there. But we need to relate to them and to our brothers and sisters in the camps, and look forward to a different home, a kingdom that's ruled by Christ. Your citizenship papers are in heaven. We take it for granted. We're American citizens. Well, you know, in Asia, they have to have papers that prove they're a citizen. Because just because you live in a country doesn't mean you're a citizen. They have papers. And every place they go, they have to show their papers. And you've got to get papers before you can go anywhere. Well, you have papers. You don't have, maybe you don't have them in your hand, but you have papers. They're in heaven, it says. Daniel 2 tells us about that image, remember? The image that pictures man's government down through history. And we know that a rock comes, like it's cut without hands, and it hits the image at the bottom, and the whole image comes tumbling down, right? And that is a picture to us that all of man's governments are going to come to an end, and something's going to take its place. This stone grows into a mountain that fills the whole earth, right? It's a new kingdom. It's a new government. It's a new administration, whatever you want to call it. The neat thing about it is you already have papers. You won't have to stand in line and register and pay somebody off to get some papers. You're already a citizen of the new kingdom. It's not here yet. Revelation 3, verse 12. He that overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. You don't have to move around and be on the run like our friends in these camps. They're in Thailand because they can't live in Burma because the government won't let them live there or would kill them if they were there. They're refugees recognized by the United Nations. Well, in the kingdom of God, we won't have to go out anymore. We won't have to be on the run. We won't have to live in a sukkah that's easy to tear down and carry with so we can put it back up again easily. It says, I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God. In the kingdom of God, we will not need to move. We will not need to be on the run. We will have a home, the New Jerusalem from heaven, and we'll be able to stay there in peace and safety. And it says, I will write on him my new name. Now, we can maybe get a lot of things out of that, but what I get out of it is that you and I will have a new family name. We are in God's family, and we will be given a new name, a new identity, as it were, as part of this family. So this family is going to have a home. It's already prophesied. It's already there. We'll have a home in the New Jerusalem. And it says that our family will stay there forever. Won't have to leave. Not that you can't leave. It won't be like a refugee camp that you can't get out. But you won't have to leave. You won't have to be on the run. And our, you know, maybe that doesn't mean a whole lot to you or to me in this country, but to our friends and our brothers and sisters in the camps in Thailand, in Western Thailand, that means a lot. Because they're on the run for their lives. They're under the protection of the United Nations in camps just a few kilometers from the border where they'd be killed if they were on the other side. So, oh, I should have just blacked out there. We do not have to run anymore. We will not have to run anymore. We will belong. We belong to a family now. We will be given a new family name. We'll be able to stay in the New Jerusalem forever. That's our home. And you and I are already citizens.